The wisdom about how we learn grammar has been shaken by some recent research. For years it was thought that we learnt grammar largely from listening to the way other people speak. But it could be that the grammar of all languages are based on a particular structures in the human mind. The findings are from a new study into the way grammar is formed and learned. And one of the scholars who undertook the study, Professor David Adger, who's from the Queen Mary University of London, joins us now to talk about the study. Professor Adger, welcome to RN Drive.
Hello, Rebecca.
Now, what's the established wisdom for the way that we learn grammatical structures of language?
I think there isn't an established wisdom, but there are two kinds of big ways of thinking about it. So more recently, especially within psychology rather than within linguistics, there's been a real push to think about the way that we internalize grammar as essentially coming from the commonness of the ways that the words we hear that we're exposed to when we learn language, the commonness of how particular words are connected to other words. So what you're really learning is, rather than learning grammatical rules from this perspective, what you're really learning is just which kinds of words are more or less likely to come next to other kinds of words. So that's one approach that's been gaining in some confidence recently in the field. And what we attempted to do was to test the predictions of that approach as against another view which says, actually, when we learn language, what we do is we have sort of innate biases in our minds that impose certain kinds of structure on the language we hear. So those are two different kinds of views, and we wanted really just to see whether we could whether we could come up with a way of teasing them apart, and that's the research that we did.
So take me through some of the detail of the study about how you and Professor Cuthbertson, you undertook this study. So what was the process? How did you test this theory?
So what we did was we actually invented a sort of artificial nano language, a little kind of tiny artificial language, we focused very sort of specifically on a particular kind of set of phrases. Really, it's the kind of phrases that you use when you say things like "those three blue balls" or "these 12 green chairs." I mean, just incredibly tiny little aspect of language there. The reason we focused on that was because we know from lots of cross-linguistic studies looking at hundreds of languages what kinds of structures we find out there. You know, right? And it turns out that some structures are far more common than others, so some orders are very common. So the English order, these three green balls, is very common. The reverse of that is also very common. That's the order you find in languages like Thai. Other logical possibilities are much less common. So if you say something like balls, these three green, so it's like Thai, and the word balls, or the noun comes first, and the rest of the stuff come after it in the same order as English, that's pretty rare. You find that in a couple of languages, a few African languages, mainly Bantu languages. And then the reverse of that, where you have something like blue, three, these, balls, we don't know of a single language that does that. So that was very interesting to us. And what we thought we'd do is take that little domain and we'd try and test to see what would happen if we took speakers of a language like English, confronted them with the order of, say, Thai, right, using English words, but the order of Thai, but didn't give them enough information. All we would do is we'd give them the information that says, you can say balls blue, or you can say boxes three, or you can say dogs those. So they'd only get little two-word collocations, but from that they'd have to intuit a rule which says, okay, what happens when you have three words? What happens when you want to try and translate these three balls or four blue boxes into this new language? So they don't have that information, right, in the data that they're exposed to for the new language. And so so you have to basically make a guess. Now, the two different theories that I just sketched for you make quite different predictions there. So the theory that says your knowledge of language is stored depending upon the frequency or the commonness of which words essentially come right before other words, that would predict that if you say, you know, the noun like boxes or balls first, you should then follow it with the orders of English words, right? The words, I mean, because that's what you've been exposed to, that's what you know about, that's how your language should be stored. So you should be saying balls, these three big, okay?
Yep.
That's not what happened. That's, I mean, so that didn't happen. What people did instead is that they went for the tie order. They went for the order that goes balls and then blue, right? And then three and then these. That is, they're completely the reverse order from English. And we did lots of kind of fancy statistics to show that really you can't model this by appealing just to the commonness of one particular word type before another one. So we concluded from that there must be something else that's essentially helping people when they're learning this new language impose a different structure on it. And we thought it was very interesting that the structure you get is the other most common structure that you find in languages of the world. That is the kind of structure you find in languages like Thai. Whereas the structure that you don't get is incredibly rare in languages of the world. So it's almost as though the speakers, you know, I mean, this is not true, of course, but it's almost as though the speakers kind of knew how that Thai was a pretty reasonable pattern to follow and Bantu languages were not a very reasonable pattern to follow. I mean, obviously they don't know that because they don't know Thai and Bantu languages, right? But, so what we really took from that is that the reason that the speakers in our little experiment followed the most common patterns, and the reasons that those patterns are the most common patterns is because human brains have sort of innate bias to organize the phrases, these little phrases, in a particular kind of way.
So it's almost like constructing this means that they're guessing, the guessing kind of hints at this underlying invisible structure in our brains.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, I mean, there's a sort of interesting question. There's an article about this in The Conversation, which is an Australian website, and I've been talking to some of the people who have been asking me questions about this research. And there's an interesting question there that comes up that's been raised by a number of people on that website about how conscious is this? Are they consciously coming up with rules, or is it kind of subconscious? So that's one of the things we want to test next. But even if they are consciously coming up with some kind of a rule, there's a deep question about why they're doing that, rather than just following the statistical patterns of English. So that still is telling you that there's some bias in our heads to come up with rules. And those rules are not rules that simply follow the surface pattern. There's something deeper going on there.
The origin of the bias about whether it's actually in the what part of the brain would be fascinating. Now, does this actually tell us that we should be teaching languages differently?
I don't know if it does. I think that, for me, this is really interesting because it tells us something very fundamental about about our mental setup, about the ways that human beings work, about human nature at some level. How we teach languages, it's an interesting question, but I think it's somewhat removed from, you know, the sort of deeper questions that we were investigating, which is what is the nature of what's going on? I would think that there are lots of really great ways of teaching languages, especially as a second language, which really do involve you getting used to patterns. I just don't think that that's how young children exposed to their first language are behaving. They seem to bring these innate biases to things. And also I think that in a sort of naturalistic setting, so when, for example, you know, you've got immigrant languages coming in, they change as time's going on. So either the language of immigrants can change depending upon the surrounding language of the community they're in, or that community language can also change. In fact, I've been involved in some recent work here in London looking at the emergence of a sort of teenage variety of English, which is deeply influenced by the various
text
kinds of immigration
messages?
Patterns we see in London. Not by text messages.
I do wonder how text messaging and all the rest of it is changing our language and the language of younger people sometimes.
The way we speak, yeah. I mean, language is one of these things that you can't really put a rein on. It does what it wants to do. And it's been doing that for millennia, and it will continue to do what it wants to do. So we as maybe not I don't know how old you are, but I'm certainly not the youngest of individuals. We can rail about, oh, language is changing and it's all being, you know, messed around by text messaging and things like that. But I just think it will do what it wants to do.
Language will evolve. Absolutely.
Language will evolve, and we should look and see how it evolves. And that is actually also something which can tell us something very deep about how our cognitive setup works. Like, that is what the biases in our human brains are, which I think is completely fascinating.
Professor David Adja from Queen Mary University of London, thank you so much for joining us on RN Drive.
It's been a pleasure.